Hi, this is Dr. Pedro Ramirez, Editor-in-Chief of the International Journal of Gynecological Cancer. And today I have the great pleasure of interviewing Dr. Thomas Bartle and Dr. Arina Onoprienko, who are in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology in the Division of General Gynecology and Gynecologic Oncology at the Medical University of Vienna in Austria. We're really very excited to discuss this very important article. The title of the manuscript is The Prognostic Role of the Transcription Factor ARID1A in Patients with Endometrial Cancer of No Specific Molecular Profile Subtype. Arina, Thomas, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for accepting our invitation and for the opportunity to discuss this article.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for the invitation. It's an honor.
Thank you again. I know that, you know, certainly we have lots of questions and we wanted to discuss, and I hope we'll be able to get through all of these questions. So I'll start with Arina, and I'll ask you first, can you tell us as to what is NSMP within the molecular classification and what is ARID1A?
Well, the term NSMP, or no specific molecular profile, refers to a subclassification of endometrial cancers originating from initial TCGA data published more than 10 years ago. Following ESGO-ESTRO-SCP guidelines, we subdivide endometrial cancers into prognostic subgroups of polyimmutated, mismatch repair deficient, and P53 aberrant. More recently, subtyping also gained the predictive value, most prominently following RUBY study, which defined a new therapeutic standards for advanced and recurrent mismatch repair deficient endometrial cancers. However, around 50% of all endometrial cancers cannot be subclassified according to poly-E, MMR, or P53 status. This group of tumors falls into a group of no specific molecular profile, NSCP, tumors with very heterogeneous group of patients and with intermediate prognosis. Defining biomarkers for further subdivide this group of tumors, both in prognostic and predictive terms, is of high clinical interest to date. Regarding ARID1A, AT-rich interaction domain 1A, it is a transcription factor responsible for regulating gene expression that drives oncogenesis and tumor suppression. ARID1A is mutated in approximately 6% of all solid cancers, including endometrial cancer and ovarian cancer. ARID1A alterations were previously associated with pro-immunogenic tumor microenvironment, and ongoing research is exploring its potential predictive value for checkpoint inhibitor therapy across different cancer types.
Well, Arina, thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. And I wanted to follow up with what triggered your interest towards this specific topic or this particular study?
The molecular classification system of endometrial cancer had repeatedly shown strong and independent prognostic value. It's led to changes in risk stratification and even in therapy strategies for some groups of these patients. However, no validated therapeutic recommendations for more than 50% of newly diagnosed endometrial cancers for NSCP subgroup are available to date. Due to its heterogeneous molecular background, there is an urgent clinical need to identify new biomarkers to refine the molecular subclassification of this tumor subtype.
And Arina, some of the questions that we'll be asking are from our fellows in the journal. And this first question comes from Sabrina Piedimonte, and she's in Montreal, Canada. And she asks, can you talk about the rationale for selecting ARID1A as a potential biomarker? And is there any association to the pathogenesis as it is in clear cell ovarian carcinoma as an example?
Yes, of course. ERAD1A mutations were previously hypothesized to promote tumor motility, modulate the tumor immune microenvironment, and increase the expression of PD-L1. For example, our scientific group previously demonstrated the significant association between decreased ERAD1A expression and positive PD-L1 expression in mucinous ovarian cancer. ERAD1A mutations were already observed as an independent predictor for poor prognosis in certain cancer types, for example, in non-small lung cancer or in gastric cancer. Currently, the role of ERAD1A as a potential molecular target is a hot topic in cancer research. Previously, studies reported that 30 to 40% of endometrial cancers appear to harbor ERAD1A alterations and could modify their phenotypes and clinical behaviors. We selected ERAD1A as a potential biomarker because of high incidence of ERAD1A alterations in the endometrial cancer and its prognostic value reported for other cancer types. Several genetic alterations, including ERAD1A, were suspected to be associated with early carcinogenic events of ovarian clear cell cancer. The potential association between ERAD1A and tumor genesis of endometrial cancer is a very interesting hypothesis for further investigation. However, to our knowledge, no evidence about causative association between pathogenesis of endometrial cancer and clear cell ovarian cancer are available to date.
Great. So excellent discussion on the introduction. So now let's get a little bit into the methods and the study design for this particular study. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Our study was designed as a retrospective analysis of prospectively collected single-center database of all consecutive patients with primary endometrial cancer who underwent primary surgical resection and, depending on the stage, received adjuvant treatment. We analyzed the data of all patients with stages 1A up to 4B, according to figure 2009, for whom the oncologic follow-up was available. The assessment of mismatch repair protein status by combined immunohistochemistry and molecular profiling by targeted next-generation sequencing were performed as part of ongoing clinical routine. In the final analysis, we included only patients with both immunohistochemical assessment and complete molecular profiling, including ERAD1A. Our main aim of study was to analyze whether there is an association between ERAD1A status in NSMP subgroup of endometrial cancer and disease recurrence.
So now let's talk about the results. What are some of the things that you want to highlight? What were the results of this important study?
In total, we included 127 patients, of which 72 patients were classified as NSCP endometrial cancers. ERAD1A mutations were observed in one third of this subgroup, namely in 24 cases. ERAD1A mutated tumors were significantly associated with higher risk of recurrence and impaired progression-free survival. We did not find association between ERAD1A status and disease-specific survival. Interestingly, the patients with ERAD1A mutated tumors within the NSCP subgroup who experienced recurrence showed better therapy response to second-line therapy. However, the number of patients undergoing second-line therapy is very limited, and this finding and considerations in regard to better response to second-line therapy should be seen as pure exploratory.
Excellent. So now let's get into some of the questions that our fellows had for some specific details of your results. The first one comes from Yossi Assur. He's also in Montreal. And he's asking, given that median follow-up within the subgroup of ERAD1A mutated patients was 22.5 months, what was the median follow-up of the ERAD1A wild type? Could this have made an impact in the results?
The median follow-up within ERAD1A mutated subgroup was 22.5 months, and within ERAD1A wild type was 21.5 months. So there is no statistically significant difference in follow-up periods between the two subgroups. I would say any bias in regard to different follow-ups are unlikely.
Very well. This next question comes from Beatriz Navarro in the Canary Islands. And she's asking, in this study, you stated that patients were recruited from 2017 to 2022. However, ARID1A sequencing became part of routine assessment after the mid-2018. Do you think this may include some bias in the study?
It's a very interesting question. So until mid-2018, molecular profiling was performed using 50-gene panel, which really did not include ARID1A sequencing by default. Starting from mid-2018, this panel was replaced by 161-gene panel, which incorporates ARID1A sequencing. However, ARID1A sequencing was sporadically performed in certain patients between mid-2017 to mid-2018 for other studies or as part of validation of methods for our molecular pathology unit. We discussed this issue and ultimately decided to include these older cases because of its longer follow-up. Because it's particularly valuable to achieve statistical power. We are talking about just only five cases, namely four cases of ARID1A wild type and one case of ARID1A mutated. Interestingly, ARID1A mutated tumor is recurred and four ARID1A wild type tumors not. So it was as it was a really small fraction of cohort and ARID1A sequencing was performed sporadically, not on clinical request, we think that any bias in regard to these cases are unlikely.
Excellent. Well, Irina, thank you so much. We'll let you take a brief break and we'll get now to Thomas Bartle with some of the easier questions. Now, Thomas, let's talk about this next question from Elena Olearo. She asks, ARID1A mutations were observed in a significant amount of poly-mutated patients, 60%, who we know have a good prognosis. Given the results of your study on NSMP population, do we have to consider the poly-mutated ARID1A mutated patients a subgroup of poly that have a higher risk of recurrence?
Thank you for the question. So first, I want to highlight that our study was not set out to actually assess any other molecular subgroups in NSMPs. We totally focused on NSMPs, and we decided to provide all the sequencing data, also of the other subgroups, like in terms of descriptive analysis to allow for better contextualization of our data and also to support the validity of our data. So just based on the data we have in the study, I cannot answer the question. But on a personal note, if we go into literature, we know that poly-mutated tumors they tend to induce a hypermutated genotype, and following this, they also have a very, very distinct clinical behavior. If we read any NGS results of a poly-mutated tumor, we often see 30, 40, 50 mutations which are seemingly pathogenic. But from what we think we know to date is that most of these tumors, sorry, most of these mutations most likely are not related to the clinical behavior of the tumor, but this clinical behavior is determined by poly. And this is also how I would see ARID1A. So if we get a result like an NGS result and one of these mutations is ARID1A out of 50, I would rather see it as a double classifier, just most like comparably do like this classical double classifier, like poly and P53. In these cases, it's a poly and not a P53. So I would not overinterpret any ARID1A finding in a poly, but rather consider it just a poly. And yeah, in line, I also don't think, like we don't know the data, but I don't think that ARID1A would be a promising prognostic biomarker for polys in future.
Yeah, I think it's a follow-up to that, and perhaps you kind of addressed a lot of this already. Sabrina Piedimonte asked, is it surprising that it harbors a worse prognosis in the NSMP patients? when you have an ARID1A mutation in a polymutated population.
Yeah, following actually to what I just said, to me it would not be surprising, as I think we'd rather have to consider RNA mutations in these patients as like a secondary event, as a passenger mutation, and not as a mutation that actually determines clinical behavior.
Yeah. Again, following up on a similar topic, Ilaria Capasso from Italy, she asked, based on your literature search and the results of your study, do you believe that ARID1A could also be used to subclassify MMR-deficient endometrial cancers, since you showed that 30% of MMR-deficient endometrial cancers carry ARID1A mutations?
So that's a question that sounds very similar, but it's actually way harder to answer. So we could look at this, like, trying to give a very simplified answer, and like the simple way to answer it would be, again, we know that MMRDs also induce, like, to some extent, like a hypermutated genotype. And as ARID1A is just a frequent mutation, the hypermutated genotype would just increase the odds of also finding our ARID1A. And we could consider it, again, a secondary event, which is not clinically relevant. However, I don't think that this actually would be satisfying, because if we go into detail, and I have to go into translational detail, what ARID1A actually does. The function of ARID1A is to recruit the mismatch repair protein MSH2 to chromatin during replication. Just have to repeat that because it is crucial, and it took me forever to like memorize the sentence. ARID1A recruits MSHT during replication. So in this light, I think it appears very unlikely this is a coincidence. We know from translational studies that the function of ARID1A is very closely intertwined with something we could call mismatch repair protein capacity, meaning even if we have a loss of ARID1A, MSH2 is still there and is functional, but at a very reduced efficacy. But we know that the expression of ARID1A correlates with like the output of the whole mismatch repair protein apparatus. So if we lose ARID1A, we will still have, like, all our assays will say that MMR is proficient, but in fact, there's a functional impairment, which we currently don't really see in like what we assess. So this is the one loose end of this topic. The other loose end of the topic is, to come back to answer the question, we have a ton of clinical evidence of associations showing that ARID1A mutations are associated with better response to immunotherapy. And I think at this point, we could like probably provide a bit of evidence to get these both loose ends together, as I think it'd be crucial to further assess ARID1A in MMRDs, because this could be like a missing link to better understand what we're seeing here in terms of results.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Thomas, for that very thorough explanation. This next question comes from Elena Olearo from Italy also. And she asks, given your results in terms of progression-free survival and disease-specific survival, in which clinical setting would you suggest to look for ARID1A mutations, at first diagnosis or at recurrence?
Personally, I think with the results we have, we have to take a few steps back now, because I think it would be just too early and a bit premature to give clinical recommendations basing on the data we gathered and the data we have also in literature. So it would get very hypothetical now, and like just given we had the validation data we need, ARID1A actually features a very interesting characteristic, which would make it very promising as a biomarker. Namely, right now it looks like we could just assess the function of ARID1A by immunostaining. So we had all the NGS, but the NGS is expensive, and the NGS is also complicated, as it's not a single gene locus. But as I said, given we had all this data, In future, we could probably just like perform an immunostaining, which is very cheap and easily available, and get the information we need. And I'll come to that in a minute. But also, I don't really see RNA as a prognostic biomarker in future, but more like as a predictive one. And if we need this information, we could just like perform the immunostaining during first diagnosis, and we would have everything we need.
So now back to another question from Ilaria Capasso, and she mentions NSMP. It's a large and still relatively unexplored molecular class. Some studies have also found association between ER status, grade, L1 CAM and CT NNB1, and risk of recurrence and death in this specific molecular setting. How would you integrate all of this information and the results from your study to potentially predict the risk of recurrence in this patient population?
Well, I guess now it gets complicated because this question could probably fill a whole conference rather than just a single question. So again, I think we are in a very privileged situation right now, because right now we have more data, I call it like raw data on biomarkers in for NSMPs. We have more data within we could actually comparatively interpret, contextualize, and validate. I would look for a promising biomarker in terms of prognosis, to be honest, right now there are more promising biomarkers available than RNA. So I have to refer to one paper, I think was published last year in Modern Pathology, was a Canadian study featuring more than 1,000 NSMPs. And this study actually identified like two features in NSMPs, namely being low grade and expressing estrogen receptor. And they showed that this actually is a huge part of NSMPs, and these tumors do not recur, at least like in low figure stages. So if I would look for a very promising biomarker, which is easily to be implemented, and it's actually both features, just like we already assess routinely, I would start there. In terms of RNA, as I said, I don't see RNA as the 27th potential biomarker in terms of prognosis. The data we provide were rather meant to show that NSMPs who harbor RNA mutations behave clinically totally different. And as I said, I like, gave this picture with those two loose ends between translational medicine and the associations with checkpoint inhibitor response. So I would rather see this as a very early step in going in the direction of defining RNA as a predictive biomarker rather than a prognostic one.
Great. This next question from Beatriz Navarro drives at the management. She asks, following the results of this study in which IRR1A appears to be associated with a higher rates of recurrence and deterioration in progression-free survival, to what extent would you change the adjuvant treatment in these patients?
Easy question. I would not. As I said before, we don't have the data yet. It would be premature to give any recommendations based on the data we have. And to contextualize this to all the people listening to this podcast, we observed 9 out of 24 recurrences, one out of 24 cases occur in RNA mutants, and 6 out of 48 in wild types. So this is a very low number. Like, statistically speaking, like if you see an effect in a low number of cases, you can assume the effect is strong, but still this would be just too early to give like a valid interpretation of how to handle this in a clinical way. This would just like need validation, high numbers and everything. So I would just stick to less like being a hypothesis generating study, which offers us very valuable insights in how to probably handle RNA in future, but right now would not change anything in clinical routine based on that.
Very well. And Thomas, just a few more questions. This other one from Yossi Sewer, and I presume also not an easy one either. How do the authors reconcile the significant association between ARID1A mutations and increased recurrence risk and compromised progression-free survival with the observation that these patients exhibit a better response to therapy?
Right. So the problem was, like, we started this paper on looking for a binary outcome. So is RNA associated with recurrence, yes or no? As these like results were kind of impressive, considering the low number, we moved on trying to validate this in terms of time to event analysis and progression-free survival. And also these curves, we provided them in the publication, they separate beautifully. So it's actually quite impressive. Following this, we thought about also validating it, like at least like exploratorily looking at what would happen if we look at DSS, like disease-specific survival. And normally you would need a lot of patients to see effects. You would need a lot of follow-up and very homogeneous cohorts. Our paper doesn't provide any of that. However, we did it just in an exploratory way, and what we saw is somewhat astonishing, like the Kaplan-Meier curves, like the outcomes, they switched. And suddenly this patient subgroup, which was like mutant and would we assume would have a worse outcome, we didn't see a single disease specific event in these patients, in the mutated patients, which, to be honest, is odd. To explain this, we approached this issue to try to explain it by providing maximum transparency. So we just like gave all the data in the study. We also provided the more or less the raw data and the supplements, so everyone can like interpret it themselves. But still, we talk about 8 patients. It's 8 cases who received recurrence therapy and 2 are follow up. It's an interesting finding, and there could be something behind that. It's hard to say. Like, if you go into literature, there are a lot of explanations for this. So we know this association between RNA and high risk of recurrence. We see this in other tumors as well. We know this for gastrointestinal tumors. We know this for meningiomas. This is somewhat established. If you try to answer why probably do RNA mutants respond better to recurrence therapy, there is also evidence, but this is even more complex. So we know that certain solid tumors respond better to radiotherapy if they're a mutant. We know that certain chemotherapies appear to work better in mutants. So for example, this is kind of interesting, in clear cell ovarian cancer, if they're RNA mutated, there is quite strong preclinical evidence that they respond way better to gemcitabine. And we have the same observations also for gastrointestinal tumors. But these associations are very, very complex. So it is possible that we just get like a very first glimpse that these RNA mutant endometrial cancers may respond better to systemic therapy or like recurrence therapy. But to interpret this, I would prefer to see not like 8 cases, but 800. So basically, we cannot really answer this on a profound level of evidence to date.
Well, thank you so much to both of you. And I want to ask one last question, and certainly for both of you as well. I often ask this to the authors: how should the results of this study change in any way or impact how we manage or counsel patients? I'll start with you, Thomas.
To manage or counsel patients. So I think this will somehow sum up what I just mentioned. Right now, neither nor. It's also, as I said, I do not see RNA as a promising prognostic factor, but rather as a predictive in intermediate future. Let's see how it goes. We probably see patients who clinically behave as if they were mismatch repair deficient following RNA mutation, but just from a based on analysis, they are not. I like to refer to a term we've been using in ovarian cancer for years, namely BRCAness. So BRCAness described ovarian cancers which acted as if they were BRCA mutant, but actually they were not. And I mean, don't take me too serious, but it's an hypothesis, but probably we just see something like MMRDness in these endometrial cancers following RNA questions, RNA mutations. I don't know, but this is how it could go. And this is where our study could provide a very first step showing there is a clinical impact. And probably, and that's the idea, we could in future identify a subset, probably 30% of NSMPs who could profit from immunotherapy. That would be the idea, hopefully.
Very well. Arina, any additional comments?
Well, I think Thomas explained it very thoroughly. But yes, I think it is only the hypothesis, and it could be a promising prognostic marker for exactly some group of these patients. Yes.
Well, thank you both so much. Absolutely a pleasure speaking with you, Thomas Bartle, Arina Onoprienko. Really, it's a great opportunity to discuss a really important and relevant topic. Thank you for bringing light to this group of patients. And congratulations on your work and to everyone else who contributed on this study with you and your team at Medical University of Vienna. So really very exciting work, and we look forward to additional work from both of you and from your team. Thank you once again.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.